Welcome to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat. Also brought to you by Discount Drug Mart, the official drugstore of the Cleveland Indians. By Shears, sheer perfection in every bag. And by the Nissan team, Bedford Nissan and Mentor Nissan.
Welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field, downtown Cleveland, where the Indians are taking on the White Sox this weekend, part of a Central Division homestand for the Tribe, with the Royals coming in on Monday night to open up a three-game series. Good show lined up for you this week. We will continue some of our coverage that some of our stations may have been tuned into, covering the statue unveiling for Larry Doby, one of the great pioneers in the game of baseball, a Hall of Famer, and the Indians certainly glad that he spent 10 years of his career with the Cleveland Indians, his Hall of Fame career, and much, much more than that, as we will hear later on in the show from Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio, and we'll also bring you some of that statue unveiling ceremony as Mudcat Grant was here, as well as Larry Doby Jr. was here, speaking great thoughts about his dad with the statue unveiling today. We'll also hear from Carter Hawkins, the Indians' Director of Player Development, the Weekly Farm Report, and we'll take a look back at the week in review coming your way shortly as we get started with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where we are now less than a week away from the trade deadline, and the Indians with a difficult week gone by here. They've dropped three out of four, splitting a series with the Brewers and then dropping the first two of their series here with the White Sox Thursday and Friday nights, but they still harbor hopes of trying to make some noise in terms of the wild card chase. They headed into play on Friday night, 5.5 back of that second wild card, so still some hope, but the Indians do need to play better baseball than they have been coming out of the All-Star break. Now, they did take two out of three from Cincinnati last weekend, capped by a bizarre game on Sunday, a 5-3 win for the Indians in 11 innings, and the highlights featured bases-loaded walks, four of them for the Indians, allowing them to take a lead during the game and then take the lead in extra innings in the 11th, as it was Yan Gomes who came to the plate with the bases jammed in a 3-3 game.
The payoff pitch with the bases loaded. High! They walk in another run. Unbelievable. The fourth time the Reds have walked in a run as Gomes draws the bases loaded walk here in the 11th. And the Indians have a 4-3 lead. So Jeff Pico, the pitching coach, heading to the mound. I don't know that you can even celebrate a game like today. I guess if you win, you say, okay, well, somehow found a way to win, but good Lord.
Later on in the inning, Jason Kipnis brought in a run with a sacrifice fly, some insurance for Zach McAllister, who pitched the 11th inning and recorded his first major league save after the game. Jason Kipnis stopped by to talk about what was a bizarre, hot afternoon in Cincinnati.
Jason Kipnis had a terrific season series against the Reds. He hit almost 500 against Cincinnati. Got a sac fly today, went 2-for-4. What do you get for the Ohio Cup MVP, Jason? Congratulations.
Get a firm handshake. That's about it, a pat on the back.
A cool glass of water?
Yeah, that I poured myself.
This was one bizarre weekend, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. This took a little toll on the team. But you know what? We wanted to come out with a different mentality, different attitude. We didn't do it in the first game, but I thought we played really well in the next two.
And you mentioned that, Jason, and you come out in that first game and it doesn't go the way you want. Was there any message among the players to prior to that second game coming out?
A little bit before the game. You just wanted to make sure we came to play. We didn't waste games. we can't afford that. We can't afford to kind of sit back and just roll it out and go ahead and play other teams. So we just wanted to make sure that we come to play, we come ready, we do the little things again, kind of what we said before, and we get after it. We can't afford to lose all these games.
Hey, Kip, thanks for joining us. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
So after the victory over the Reds on Sunday, it was an off day Monday in Milwaukee and a series against the Brewers at Miller Park starting Tuesday night. Not on a good note for the Indians as the Brewers won it 8-1. But the Tribe bounced back with a solid all-around effort on Wednesday, and they got it going early. First inning, young shortstop Francisco Lindor was at the plate.
The payoff, and it's swung on and hammered to deep right field. It is gone! Francisco Lindor. It's his third Major League home run. A line drive home run to right. And the Indians have the early 1-0 lead. And Kyle Loesch has now given up 22 home runs on the year, third most in the National League. And that shot out of here in our hurry.
Well, the Indians fell behind, though, 4-1 until Michael Brantley put together a huge day, starting with this game-tying home run in the third.
Now the 1-0 pitch to Brantley. Runner goes, pitch swung on, hit high, hit deep to right, away, back and gone. Michael Brantley with a three-run homer to right, and we are tied at four. Brantley's second home run on this trip, and it's number 7 on the year. Oh, did Michael Brantley tee off.
And then it was Brantley who came through with a big RBI hit that put the Indians in front for good in the fifth. Here's the 1-1. Swung on, line drive, base hit left field. Kipnis heads for third. They're going to wave him around, and it's bobbled out there and left by Davis. That allows Kipnis to score easily, and the other two base runners move up. Lindor to third, and Brantley hustling into second ahead of the throw with a head-first slide. And the Indians are back in front. It's now the Tribe 5 and the Brewers 4 on the RBI base hit by Brantley. Later on, Yan Gomes with an RBI single.
The pitch. Gomes with a line shot to center field. Base hit. Michael Brantley scores from third. Stopping at second is Santana. And the Indians now have a 6-4 lead here in the seventh. So Yan Gomes has his second hit today, his 15th RBI. He's had 5 RBIs in this road trip.
And Carlos Santana finished the scoring for the Indians in the ninth.
The pitch swung on, rope to third. It's inside the line and down the left field line. Kicks off the sidewall, back into play. In to score is Avilas, and into second with an RBI double is Carlos Santana. So Santana laces an RBI double down the left field line. And boy, is that a big insurance run. And it was helped set up by a Mike Avila stolen base. So the Indians now lead by a score of 7-4 here in the ninth. And give Santana his 17th double and 43rd RBI.
After the game, Francisco Lindor stopped by to talk about his big day at the plate.
Congrats, Frankie, and I got to believe after a game like last night, wasn't it important to get on the board quickly today?
Yes, very important. I mean, they did what we did today. They came out yesterday, they came out swinging, and that's what we did today. You know, early in the game, we came out swinging, looking for the right pitch to drive, and that's what we did. And we executed, and we got the W.
Francisco, you look at how things have gone here in your first stretch in the major leagues, and it seems like you're able to work through the inevitable tough times at the plate and then get back where you need to be. And what have you found in terms of major league pitching and what makes it tough?
I got to continue to work towards consistency. You know, I got to be consistent with my game, in every aspect of the game, and that's what I've been trying to work. You know, I've been working as hard as I can day in and day out to be consistent, to be a very good big league player, and to help the Indians win.
Francisco, has anything surprised you? Anything, I don't know, that you didn't expect that you're finding out about Major League Baseball?
Nah, man. I mean, I think this is a dream come true. I want to continue to live in this dream that I am right now. And, there's certain things that you see that you're like, okay, this is a little different, you know, but it's the same game. You're playing against better players. You're playing against the best player in the world, pretty much. And, you know, I'm happy to be here. And I look forward to continue to work day in and day out so I can have a, so I can stay up here for a long time and bring championships to Cleveland.
And you're on a team right now that's trying to hang in there in terms of a playoff spot. They go 3-2 on this road trip. I would think that you have to be pleased, even with some hiccups in the road, that you come away with a winning road trip.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, you know, whenever you come back to the house and with a winning percentage, that's a good road trip. You know, we there were days that we didn't execute what we were supposed to, the things that we were supposed to do, but at the end of the road trip, we came out with a winning percentage, and that's what it's all about.
Well, terrific ball game today, Francisco. Thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
And while the team was in Milwaukee, we had a chance to catch up with Yan Gomes, who talked about his season so far, where he is at the plate, and some of the challenges that he's facing, as well as the team.
Now it's just a matter of turning everything on. I don't think we have any more leeway of, you know, letting a couple games go. I think we really want to make a push. I mean, and we all know how we can do those kind of late season and late inning stuff. I think we're just got to, you know, turn those big situations that we're put in into more runs.
You mentioned that, having done it before. Last 2 years, Indians have been a very good second-half ball club. Can you look back on that and feed off of that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, it's more of that we know we can do it. But I think reliving in the past is not going to, maybe just from more of the experience that we've had, I don't think we're going to sit back and know that we can do it and not try to do anything about it, because last year or the year before that, we were just thinking about the next game and, you know, trying to get us one day closer to being in contention.
All right, Yan, thanks a lot for the visit. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, thank you.
Indians returned home Thursday night, an 8-1 loss to the White Sox. And then on Friday night, too much Jose Quintana as he shut out the Indians 6-0 heading into play on Saturday. That's a look at the week gone by. Stay tuned when we return. Carter Hawkins, Indians Director of Player Development, has the Farm Report. That's next on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. As always on our show, we get up to date on the Indians farm system with the Tribe's Director of Player Development, Carter Hawkins, the weekly Farm Report. And this week, Carter was following the AA Akron Ball Club on their road swing to the south in Richmond, Virginia, and we'll hear about some of those players shortly. But first, we checked in with Carter on some of the rehab players from the big club, including Nick Swisher and Josh Tomlin, the starting pitcher who threw on Monday night down in Columbus, slated to throw again this weekend as he continues his comeback from shoulder surgery. And Carter has the report from Monday's start for Tomlin as he continues to make his way back.
Yeah, it was really solid. You know, he unfortunately is getting used to this rehab thing, and you know, certainly has gone through the process really well, and you know, getting him stretched out where, you know, we can throw 4, 5, 6 innings here, and you know, kind of settled in and, you know, an upper level, you know, at this point down in Columbus, and, you know, feel like the velocity's there, feel like the stuff is there, and it really hasn't had too many complaints about, you know, any soreness or injury at this point. So, you know, hopefully it'll be an option for us sooner than later.
And the other player on a rehab assignment is Nick Swisher, trying to see if the knees can hold up and allow him to contribute at the major league level. He's been at Lake County, and how do you decide what's best for him in terms of where he should go and what that would mean for a particular minor league team?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, for the most part, a geographic decision. You know, early on, especially in someone's rehab, you know, it's what's the closest affiliate, you know, that a player can play at that happens to be home. You know, now certainly there's a lot of upside for us to get a player like Swish, you know, or any really any major league player down to our lower levels to, you know, be around some of our young guys, get them to understand, you know, kind of the preparation and dedication that it takes to be that type of player in the major league. So, you know, we love having those guys. We know our minor league affiliates love having those guys in. And, you know, beyond just a good spread, you know, after the game just gets paid for by the big league guy, it's a great experience for those guys to be able to pick the brain of someone who's been there and done that and has, you know, achieved a lot of the things that those guys want to achieve as well.
At this point in a minor league season, they call them the dog days, but I imagine when Swish shows up, there's a little extra energy in that clubhouse.
Undoubtedly. I'm sure he puts extra energy in any clubhouse he comes into, but you know, definitely those guys in the middle of July in the Midwest League and, you know, potentially dragging just a little bit, but to have that boost is certainly welcomed by us.
We're visiting with Carter Hawkins, Indians Director of Player Development. Following the Akron Rubber Ducks, they are in Richmond for a series against the Richmond Flying Squirrels. This may be an all-nickname matchup that you're viewing, Carter.
Absolutely. There's a mascot battle after the series as well. It's been pretty impressive.
Well, you're seeing some good player development there at the AA level. I know we talked a lot about Bradley Zimmer last week on why he earned the promotion, and it sounds like he's fit right in at the AA level and hasn't missed a beat.
Yeah, he's really swung the bat really well. His first couple games, I think he was hitting over 500 through his first four games. Had a nice opposite field home run in Erie his first series. And it really, you know, like you said, it's fit in well. You know, obviously knows all these guys on this team, but definitely has not missed a beat and put him right in the middle of that lineup. Really look forward to his continued progress.
And some other players, I know we've talked recently about Anthony Gallus and Todd Hankins both having outstanding years. An interesting story, Ronnie Rodriguez having a decent stretch here at AA, but I know he played international baseball here recently, and tell us about his performance in the Pan Am games and why that's an important part of player development sometimes and a great opportunity for a young player.
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, the things like international tournaments or minor league playoffs, you know, or anything that can really just, you know, up the intensity level of a game is something we feel really strongly is a major positive opportunity for a player. You know, there's not a ton of opportunity to be in that highly competitive environment until you get to the major league. So that's why, you know, when there is an opportunity like Ronnie had at the Pan American Games up in Canada, a couple of weeks ago, you know, we certainly wanted to jump on that. Have him have that opportunity to, you know, to play in some of those pressure-packed games in front of tens of thousands of fans, and then playing for your country as well. You know, certainly there's a lot to be said for that. But, you know, just talking to Ronnie, it sounds like he had an absolute blast. The Dominican wasn't able to medal, unfortunately, but, you know, just to play against some of the better international competition, to play against, you know, the Cuban national team, and, you know, certainly there's a solid American national team there as well. You know, it was a great experience for him, and, you know, we're glad he was able to partake in it.
A couple of players who at one point in time seemed to be on that fast track moving up through the system may have had some hiccups here this season at AA. And tell us about the year for Jordan Smith, who we had seen at a winter development program in recent years and I know has shown some good power in the past. What are some of the challenges he's facing this year?
Jordan's an interesting case. You know, he's an outstanding outfielder. He can play right. He can play center. He hasn't played much left, but he certainly could if we needed him to in a pinch. But, you know, you look at him and you say, hey, this, you know, this is a major league type body. This is the type of guy that, you know, that ends up making it. And, you know, he definitely has that ability. He has the feel to hit. You know, he understands what he's trying to do at the plate. Just hasn't really been able to tap into, you know, some of the power and some of the production that, you know, we would hope he will be able to, and, you know, at some point in here in the future. So, you know, it's been a struggle for him to be able to make those adjustments, but him and Tony Mancelino and Jim Rickon and all of our hitting coaches are just working their tail off, you know, to help him make those adjustments. And it's been pretty good to see over the last couple of weeks, he started to drive some balls, you know, definitely feel like, you know, that he's still young in the process as a minor leaguer, but we're starting to make some strides here, and, you know, definitely a guy that is on our radar as a potential impact guy in the future.
And on the catching front, Tony Walters, who we've seen in Major League camp in recent years, I know having a, sounds like a tough go with injuries this season.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a setback with Tony, a little knee injury here a couple weeks ago. You know, he was playing really well, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Was, you know, really understanding, you know, how to call games, how to handle a pitching staff, not to mention the fact that, you know, he's throwing out almost every base runner that tried to steal on him. So, you know, he's down in Arizona rehabbing. Hope we'll have him back by the end of the year. But, you know, you hate to see a guy that works as hard as him and cares as much as him, you know, have any type of setback. But unfortunately, that's part of the game. And, you know, he'll get past this. And, you know, hopefully he'll be helping us out here in Cleveland here sometime soon.
And on the mound, you had a no-hitter recently from Ryan Merritt. And tell us about that and the progress that he's made this season.
Yeah, it's great to see a guy like Ryan have something like that happen for him. You know, he's a guy that because he's not overpowering with his velocity, because he's not overpowering with, you know, secondary stuff, he has a tendency to give up some hits, which we're okay with. But, you know, to see him pitch so well over the course of an entire game, to, you know, be able to throw a no-hitter is a pretty special experience for him. But, you know, he continues to get better every year. He's a guy that, you know, A, is a left-hander, B, has multiple pitches he can throw for strikes, you know, and then C, has just some moxie and feel on the mound and the ability to take on challenges. And got a little bit better every year. You know, obviously, we put him on the roster, the Major League roster, to make sure that we could keep him around for as long as we possibly can and to continue to make those improvements. And, you know, he's definitely another guy that's on that Major League radar for us, as somebody that's, you know, potentially could be a part of our rotation here sooner than later.
And two pitchers that we've talked about already this season having good years and really breaking through, Sean Marimondo in the starting rotation, and in the pen, Jeff Johnson. Are they still rolling right along?
Absolutely, yeah. It's pretty fun. Sean actually threw last night, and Scott Meany and Bob Mayer, two of our amateur scouts, you know, were at the game. And, you know, those guys don't get to see our players ever, but, you know, once a year or maybe once every other year. You know, they had both seen Sean as an amateur and had seen him, you know, periodically over his professional career. And just them watching him last night and just being able to see how much improvement he's made. You know, something that, you know, sometimes when you're Jeff Harris or Dave Wallace and don't get to see him every single day, you know, we kind of take for granted how much better he's gotten. But, you know, his stuff has improved. His just presence on the mound has improved. You know, he's just, for a very young pitcher, is extremely mature and definitely a leader of that staff. And, you know, he's throwing his fastball 93 to 95 miles an hour. He's got a great breaking ball and showing a feel for a changeup. So, you know, another guy in that rotation that, you know, definitely has a lot of major league potential. So that's been good to see. And so Jeff Johnson as well, you know, continues to rack up the saves for that team, you know, amongst a lot of other really good relievers in that bullpen. But JJ definitely, you know, has major league stuff, has a split finger that you get out in the big leagues right now if you needed to. So, you know, just his consistency will really dictate his ability to get an opportunity to the upper levels here pretty soon. But, you know, a lot of things to be excited about with this club.
Now, Carter, as always, appreciate the update, and we'll catch up with you next week. Thank you.
Good time, Rosie.
That's Carter Hawkins, Indians Director of Player Development. Stay tuned. We have more to come as we continue with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus back with you from Progressive Field, downtown Cleveland, where earlier this afternoon, the Indians honored the great Larry Doby, their Hall of Famer. Larry Doby, a pioneer in baseball, as in 1947, midway through the season, he was signed to a major league contract by then Indians owner Bill Veeck, and 2 days later appeared in his first American League game, becoming the first African-American player in the American League, following Jackie Robinson by about 3 months or so. As always, we had a chance to catch up with Bob DiBiasio, as great perspective, the Indians vice president and really a team historian of sorts, and he fills us in on some of the things that Larry Doby went through, becoming just the second player in Major League Baseball to break the race barrier and the first in the American League with a lot less fanfare than Jackie Robinson.
Well, people need to understand that Branch Rickey, and I know a lot about Branch Rickey as a fellow graduate of Ohio Wesleyan University, although Branch Rickey obviously graduated there a long time before I did. But I was the sports editor of the Transcript at Ohio Wesleyan University, and we were building the Branch Rickey Physical Education Complex. So I wrote many stories about Branch Rickey, who integrated Ohio Wesleyan's baseball team back in 1901 when he was a graduate assistant coach, and he wanted to do so in Major League Baseball. And so he identified Jackie Robinson as the young man that could withstand all that you had to deal with and endure to be the first African-American to play in Major League Baseball. And so he brought in Jackie Robinson at 27 years old, actually at 26 years old, in 1946. And he played in the Dodgers farm system, AAA in Montreal. So he had a spring training, played AAA, came back for a second spring training, made the Dodgers at 27 years old for the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. Larry Doby contract was purchased by Bill Veeck at the age of 23, mid-season of 47, off the roster of the Newark Eagles of the Negro League. So there was no drum roll. There was no setup. There was no insulation, if you want to use that word, for Larry Doby. He ended up meeting the team in Chicago. He was a second baseman. The Cleveland Indians had Joe Gordon, who was the MVP of the American League just a couple years earlier for the New York Yankees, at second base. And so everybody was wondering what Bill Veeck was doing. Was he being the carnival man again in this scenario? And that certainly was not the case. He identified Larry as a terrific athlete, ended up becoming a Hall of Fame baseball player, and Larry endured all that Jackie did. 81 days after Jackie Robinson integrated baseball, Larry Doby made history by wearing an American League uniform.
And it didn't take him long to become a key player on some very good Tribe teams. In fact, 1948 World Series, he was a key player in some critical games.
Absolutely. He moves from second base to the outfield. That was the first thing that the Indians organization at the end of the 47 season. Larry didn't get a whole lot of at-bats, a lot of playing time in 1947, as the Indians were trying to win the pennant that year as well. But he comes back in the offseason after working out as an outfielder, ends up becoming one of the best center fielders in the game at that time. As a matter of fact, in 1950, the Sporting News identified him as the best center fielder in Major League Baseball. And there were a couple pretty darn good ones running around baseball at that time. And obviously part of his Hall of Fame career, he averaged 27 home runs a season. He had the speed, the power, the agility to obviously move from second base to the outfield. Led the team in 48 in hitting in the World Series, batted .318, hit a mammoth home run in Game 4 to help the Indians win that game. So Hall of Famer. He's on the Indians' top 100 roster. He's obviously in the Indians' Hall of Fame. His uniform number's retired. Now he's in the exclusive club of having a statue and also a member of National Baseball Hall of Fame. So, again, anytime we get a chance, Rosie, to honor Larry, we love the fact to do that.
And from what you know, here he's putting together this Hall of Fame career, but he was a pioneer in the American League. How did he handle that increased responsibility?
I think after the 1948 season, they win the World Series. There's a photo, an iconic photo, of Steve Gromek, a white player, hugging Larry Doby, a black player. Their cheeks are touching. That photo appeared in every sports page around the country. First time you really saw that type of jubilation and teammates truly having a joyous occasion with one another, one white, one black. And I think Larry, he had told me on a number of occasions how proud he was of that photo, because it just did, in the way photos can, gives a picture of people coming together. And that's all that he wanted, was if me going through this would help people down the line just come together, then it was all worth it.
Great perspectives, as always, Bobby D. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Rosie.
That's Indians Vice President Bob DiBiasio with some great stories about Larry Doby, honored today with a statue unveiling here at Progressive Field. Just a great afternoon to be at the ballpark. And when we come back, we'll hear some highlights from that ceremony as we continue with Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, the site of a new statue out beyond the right field gates, as Larry Doby's statue joins Jim Thome and Bob Feller, three greats in Cleveland Indians history. For Larry Doby, it was a 10-year career in a Tribe uniform that eventually landed him in baseball's Hall of Fame. But of course, most notably, he was the first American League player to break the race barrier, the first African American player in American League history when he appeared in a Tribe game on July the 5th, 1947. Earlier today was the statue unveiling, and we have some highlights from that ceremony.
And now it is time to hear from a few of our special guests. Please welcome Indians owner Paul Dolan.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here and have the what feels like the entire Cleveland Indians family here together. I would like to make my special welcome to the Dobie family for being here tonight. It's a great day for us, and I hope it's a great day for you. Guys, I'm sorry about this perspective on me here. Unlike the two men who speak next, I did not know Larry Dobie, nor am I old enough to have seen him play. I was a child in the 60s and 70s, and I certainly knew my Cleveland Indians, and I knew my baseball history, and I knew what Jackie Robinson meant to baseball and to our country. I knew who Larry Dobie was, but he was just one of those old guys that played a long time ago. Names like Feller, Bearden, Boudreau were to me the same as Dobie. I might have understood at the time that he was the first African American to play in the American League, but I had consigned that honor to Jackie Robinson. So to me, it was somewhat of a footnote to history. History can be cruel that way. It has a way of celebrating the first person to do something significant and then discounting or ignoring all that follow afterwards, as if doing it for the second time was routine. Over the years, we have celebrated Larry Dobie and what he has meant to this franchise in many different ways. We retired his number. He is in our Hall of Fame. The street out there is known as Larry Dobie Way. The RBI kids here who play in the RBI program, it is known as the Larry Dobie program. We had a scholarship for minority baseball players at Cleveland State. Playgrounds were built in this community named after Larry Dobie. But today, we take a giant leap forward in our recognition and celebration of Larry Dobie. Yes, it's a leap that maybe we're a little late, but I hope that the significance of what we do today and going forward makes up for our tardiness. Because when we unveil this statue, we have Larry Dobie standing at our new front door, greeting fans to this ballpark for generations. We are saying to the world, here is Larry Dobie, a man we are greatly proud of, because not only was he one of the greatest Cleveland Indians of all time, but he was an even greater man, a man who was second to none. And it's time the world got to know him.
Well, thank you, Paul. And now representing his family, it is my great honor to introduce Larry Dobie Jr. Larry.
First of all, it's always good to be in Cleveland, guys. This is like a second home for my mother and father. And on behalf of my family, we'd like to thank you for this honor. It's a humbling experience that this statue is going to sit here for a long, long, long time. And so it's something that I don't think any of us ever thought would happen. And now that the day is here, it's kind of daunting. But I obviously like to thank the Indians organization and Mr. Dolan for seeing fit to erect this statue. And we are extremely proud and humbled by this showing that you guys have done for us. I'd like to thank the present day skipper, Mr. Francona, and his troops for coming out here today and supporting us. And I know if my father was here, he'd be overjoyed because his peers would be here, and to see fellow players would make him really happy. You know, back in 1947, Mr. Vec had an idea and was able to sign my dad and came to Cleveland, and a lot of people helped him become successful. There's not a lot of things in life that people do by themselves, and he had a lot of help. My mom was his number one supporter. Mr. Vec was a very good and strong supporter, and there were some teammates that didn't see color when they saw him. That's Joe Gordon and Bob Lemon and Jim Hegan. They kind of took him under his wing. There's guys that wouldn't play catch with him when he first walked out on the field, but those guys made sure he had somebody to warm up with every day. And later on, at the end of his career, he played with these two crazy guys, Gary Bell from San Antonio, Texas, and Jim Mudcat Grant from La Cucci, Florida. And those were names that I heard growing up in my house. And my father didn't say much, and I wanted to get him to tell stories, and he wouldn't say much, but the names that he brought up were the good guys. And I heard those two names since I was a little kid, so I'm thanking them for being here also. In closing, guys, I'd just like to say that this honor is not only our family's, but it's also Cleveland's honor, because he couldn't have done this without their support. Mr. Dolan is 100% correct. Everybody remembers number one. But a footnote for you, Buzz Aldrin is from our hometown in New Jersey. I guess, growing up, I wanted to hear all the stories and tell me about the home runs and the this and the that, and he didn't really talk about it. As he got a little bit older, his lips got a little bit looser. But one thing that he said, which I found hard to believe, but since I know he didn't talk much about it, and when he said it, I had to believe it. He said he never got booed in Cleveland, which meant to him that he belonged to you guys, and he was out there trying to do his best, whether he struck out four times or hit a couple of home runs. You guys didn't boo him, and he always, always remembered that. So thank you to the Dolan family. Thank you to the Indians, and especially thank you to the city of Cleveland.
Thank you, Larry. How about one more round of applause for the Doby family? All right, the time is now to unveil the statue. And before we get in position to do so, please welcome the artist who created the Larry Doby statue, the same man who did Jim's statue, Cleveland's very own David Deming. David? Well, I think we need to start the countdown with the Hall of Famers numbers. So let's start from 14 and count down. 14. Congratulations, folks. You deserve it. What an honor. Thanks, folks. Have a great time tonight, and enjoy coming and seeing these statues for many years to come.
Those are just some of the highlights from the ceremony earlier today, the statue unveiling for Larry Doby. And that's going to do it for this edition of Tribe Talk. Great to have you with us this week. We'll join you next week from Oakland, California. Indians on a road trip to the West Coast next weekend, so we'll join you then. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you that you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.
Been listening to Tribe Talk, presented by Progressive, making it easy to bundle home and car insurance. Brought to you by Subway, where winners eat. Tribe Talk is also brought to you by Discount Drug Mart, the official drugstore of the Cleveland Indians.